I'm Robin Williams, and one of this year's themes was all those billionaires shooting rockets and people up there into space. We warned in this program a few weeks ago about the reflective light pollution that's perhaps being ignored by those ventures. But now we have a professor in Adelaide warning about germs as well. Dr. Phil Cassie is head of ecology and evolutionary biology there. What concerns you most about the possibility of sending germs into space?
That they'll come back different, actually. So organisms are evolving very rapidly under space conditions. So we know that they can survive under ionising radiation, microgravity, under all the conditions that we have up in space. Experiments show that bacteria can survive on the surface, the hull of the International Space Station, for over 3 years. But we're also finding in clean rooms organisms that are essentially unrelated to life on Earth. This is not new life, it's evolved life.
But surely that's the most hostile environment you can possibly get. It's so incredibly cold. Apart from a bit of sun, there's no energy there. How do they survive at all?
These are extremophiles. Bacteria are incredibly good at it. You think of antibacterial resistance evolving in hospitals, the amount of chemical and resistance we throw at them, and yet they're evolving all the time. They are programmed to survive, and that is what they'll do.
I know they're programmed to survive, but if you're out there, I mean, it's as cold as you can get.
Yes, and so is Antarctica, so is the permafrost, so is very deep hydro vents in the deepest part of the oceans. These are things that survive in the most inhospitable places on Earth, and we are now out in space looking for places that are similar. We are actively trying to get to places that potentially support life and then taking them there and bringing them back.
And at the University of Adelaide, how are you getting the material to do any experiments at all on this sort of thing?
Yes, well, at the University of Adelaide, what we're calling for is greater recognition of the long-time study of biological invasions on Earth and the lessons that we have had here on this planet and trying to translate them into some of the security of the Committee on Space Research, Planetary Protection, engaging with biologists and particularly invasion biologists.
Anyone listening?
Well, we hope so. We've put the call out there and now we wait and see. You know, it's a great place to be doing it. South Australia is, you know, the self-proclaimed Australia's space state. So, you know, this is a good place to be making the call from. Australia has a long-standing history of biosecurity. It's well recognised globally. It's well supported by the government and it'll be nice to see that integrated into their space program as well.
We've just had a few weeks ago Kurid Windovi, who won the Bragg Prize, saying about space that the light pollution is becoming extreme because of the free enterprise rockets going into space and no one's particularly noticed that there might be a problem with reflections and the horror idea that one day you'll look up into space and there are fewer stars and more bits of flotsam kicking around there. Is this a problem that there's so much freelance work going on rather than more organised NASA-type adventures?
Oh, absolutely. A few decades ago, the space race was a couple of well-organised countries. Now, they were competing against each other, but it was much easier to regulate. But now we see a pack of billionaires and playboys engaging in this space. The privatisation is a massive problem, much harder to regulate. And we have new countries coming online as well. So we have India, Israel, Australia, all joining the space programme. So it's a much more crowded and complicated space than it's ever been.
I'm reminded somewhat of most extraordinary character in space research, a genius and also a bit of a rogue, and that's Fred Hoyle from Cambridge, because he should have got a Nobel Prize for working out where the elements come from, you know, being cooked in stars. Amazing piece of research. And he also was slightly misled about the explosion of the universe and he cursed about black holes and so on and thought there'd be steady state. However, he also is talking about diseases coming from outer space, raining from up above, and you're seeming to imply that that might actually, if we're not careful, be the case.
We haven't shown it to be the case yet, but we are out there actively looking. And I think we would be very arrogant to ever believe that this was the only planet with life on it. You know, the suggestion is that at some point in time, we will find life again, and it's not going to be little green men. It's going to be microbial or microorganisms, and these are the hardest to detect and potentially the most dangerous. We've seen a microorganism shut the world down in the last couple of years.
So we have indeed, yes. And what about the origins of that COVID and wet markets and such like. Are you studying in your department, a big department at the University of Adelaide, that sort of problem we have of being sensible about the ways in which germs get to travel around through the almost really reckless exploitation of wildlife?
Yeah, so our primary research is into the wildlife trade and biosecurity preparedness around that. And the way that we use wildlife is actually one of the greatest threats to biodiversity, as well as, of course, opening up these conditions for things like the emergence of new diseases. The global trade in wildlife at the moment is worth well over $30 billion a year. It includes tens of thousands of species, and many of them are unsustainably harvested, trafficked illegally, as well as their welfare. They are putting ecosystems under enormous threat and also threatening human health and livelihoods as well.
When you've got cybersecurity, when you've got all the other things we've mentioned, plus this wildlife trade, how are they going to enforce it?
It's a huge problem. Cybersecurity is an interesting one because so much of the illegal wildlife trade outside of places like wet markets, which people are much more familiar with now, has moved on online to the internet. So we're seeing illegally transported and sold species being marketed on the internet. It's opened up a whole new range of opportunities for the commercial trade in wildlife.
And my final point, my final question to you, knowing your very important department in the University of Adelaide, if you're the professor, your message is you're not simply saying, I'm training you to be a biologist, I'm training you to be of use in the world, which is going to be so complicated and where a background in science is essential.
Oh, absolutely. One of the greatest privileges I have at Adelaide is I teach into the first year advanced science program. And one of the questions I ask in that first week is, who wants to be a science communicator? Who wants to be a politician? The last thing I want to be doing is training people to be academics. What I want them to do is take a science literate crowd and go out into all sorts of job opportunities and vocations, because you know, we need everyone to be science literate.
Dr. Phil Cassie, Head of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology, University of Adelaide. And his theme on studying science you'll hear repeated many times in this programme.